everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad that you are with us. This show is put on by our nonprofit, Sped Homeschool, and every week we address issues that are related to special education, homeschooling, homeschooling struggling learners, unique learners, all those things, and we focus on a different theme every month. And this month, we are talking about launching your child well and how do you prepare through your homeschooling years to do that. And so tonight we are going to be talking about self-advocacy and how to teach those types of skills to your students, because it definitely usually doesn't come in a curriculum box
no, it doesn't.
Or in a book. So welcome, Mickey. Mickey's my guest tonight. I'm so glad that you're here and that you can share some wisdom with us on this topic, because I think sometimes we don't know quite what to do with this. So
it is a difficult position to be in, mm-hmm. as those kids grow up.
Yeah,
I like to say you don't give up the self-advocacy or the advocacy, but you transition from advocacy into self-advocacy.
Yes, but so that handover in itself.
Exactly.
Difficult.
It is. Trust me, my son is 40, my daughter's 38. It doesn't go away.
It doesn't.
You just pick your battles.
Yes. Oh, that is a good tip of wisdom right there. I love that. So we are live tonight. So we would love for those of you that are already watching to be able to share this broadcast with other people that you know that may be interested in this topic. And whether they're homeschooling or not, we're going to be talking about just preparing kids to be able to advocate for themselves. And that is a huge topic across the board for students who mm-hmm. have learning struggles. So definitely we're going to be talking to homeschool parents, but just know that we're going to be addressing issues that are really, it's really relevant to anyone who
sure.
has a child with struggles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so this broadcast is made possible by viewers like you. Sped Homeschool is a nonprofit, and if you want to learn more about becoming a donor partner with us, you can visit our website at spedhomeschool.com/donate. And so Mickey, as we get started, I would love our audience to just get to know you and a little bit of your background and just your experience in this area.
Sure. Well, I think I've been teaching for probably about 100 years. I actually taught, the very first class I taught was a fifth grade before I had my degree.
Wow.
So it's not that far off. Mm-hmm. But no, I was an elementary teacher for about 8 years. Hmm. And eventually went back and got my learning disability certificate.
Okay.
And became a learning disability specialist.
Mm.
And I worked in the middle school for a while, and then I transitioned over to the high school. So I spent the bulk of my time in the K-12 system as a high school learning disabilities teacher.
Okay.
And I told the kids over and over again, I said, when I went to college, the only thing that I was absolutely positive of was that I was never, ever, ever going to teach high school. I was certain. The little ones, you know, love the little ones.
Right.
And, but I ended up finding, I really, really loved the high school kids and transitioning kids and helping kids transition over into the college. When I moved to Florida, I took a position at the community college here, and I was there for 15 years helping these same kids transition into the college life. And then the last thing I did before I retired was I worked as a, at the university as a federal grant director for a TIPSED grant that established inclusive post-secondary classes for kids with intellectual disabilities.
That's awesome.
So every age, every level. And now I'm tutoring little kids.
Oh, wow.
I'm full circle back to the little ones, but I love it. I just love it. So, yeah.
Well, you're just a teacher at heart then.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just to thrive on. So that's awesome. And so many families, I'm sure, have benefited from the work that you've done.
I hope.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So if you are joining us live, just know that you can be part of our conversation. If you have questions about advocacy, self-advocacy for your kids, and if something that we're talking about just stirs up a question or a comment, make sure you put those in the feed, whether you're watching on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Periscope. We would like to have you as part of our conversation. That's why we do this live. And we want to make sure that you get your questions answered. And I know that's it's hard in this day and age where we're always looking for answers to specific questions. And we can do searches out on the internet, but when you've got a real live person who really cares, like Mickey does, it makes a world of difference to get
thank you.
Those questions answered. So, but you know, as we're starting this, can you tell us the difference? Because I've already said advocacy and self-advocacy. What is the difference between the two of those?
Well, in my mind, advocacy is what we as parents do. It's running interference, doing what our kids need, making sure everybody follows through with whatever they're supposed to follow through with, mm-hmm. our kids and the adults that they work with, that they're involved with. You know, we do for our kids. That's what we do. And we all do that.
Yeah.
But as they transition into high school and the college level and mm-hmm. adulthood and adult mm-hmm. roles and that sort of thing, whether they're going to college or vocational school or going out and getting work, whatever their decision is, mm-hmm. there's a point where you have to change the guard. You have to pass the torch.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to pass the torch to your kids so that they can advocate for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, advocacy is what the parents do. Self-advocacy is when their kids take over that job.
Got it.
That's my thought anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to remember that because we need to make that definition and that defining line no matter
really.
When it happens.
Exactly.
And work towards that goal.
And one of the things that when I talked about transition I did podcast on it, and I did a couple of presentations mm-hmm. talking about where I talked about this self-advocacy and how that works. One of the things in my research that I really liked was the rights law definition for self-advocacy. I don't know if you have that. Yeah. And if you don't mind me reading it,
oh, I'd love
very quickly yep, that way, and then we'll jump off from there.
Mm-hmm.
I flipped my papers over and there it is. Alrighty. This is, to me, I think probably the best definition for self-advocacy out there.
Mm.
Self-advocacy is learning how to speak up for yourself, making your own decisions about your own life, learning how to get information so that you can understand things that are of interest to you, finding out who will support you in your journey, knowing your rights and responsibilities, problem solving, listening and learning, reaching out to others when you need help and friendship, and learning about self-determination.
Hmm.
I think it just encompasses everything,
it
but it's
does.
That
it really
it's that growing
well.
Process that we all have to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. Even if a child doesn't have what we call disability or a learning struggle, that those are transitions that we make for everyone. That's as we move into adulthood, but we just need to be more purposeful because I think, like you were saying earlier, Mickey, is that you know. We as parents are in that advocacy role so much more for our kids.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to be. Mm-hmm. It's the nature of the beast. It really is.
It really is.
You have to stay on top of things. You just can't not do it.
It's so true. Yeah. So how would you define self-advocacy for us and put in the context within some of the basis of things that you have experienced in and through your career?
Okay. When I was, when I started working at the college, I was hired as a learning disability specialist at the college. And my job was twofold, actually. It was to meet the students and do the intake.
Okay.
So when the students first come into the college, get their information, collect their documentation, go over some of the finer points of what they're going to, what's going to happen and how things are going to change. And, you know, to make sure that they were transitioning into college from the college's point of view, making sure how to get the accommodations and so on that they needed.
Right.
And also, I read a lot of documentation,
Oh, I'm sure.
I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. I really have. It's, there's some documentation that's perfect. And there's other documentation that's like, how much did you spend for this? You know, it's really, it's a shame. Yeah. But regardless, I would have to evaluate the documentation in order to assess the accommodations that were available.
Right.
Because one of the things that happens is parents don't realize oftentimes that accommodations you had in the K-12 system, whether you're homeschooled or public schooled or private schooled, anything that you were accommodated doesn't automatically happen at the college.
Yes.
That's so
a very good thing to point out.
So it's a whole new world and a whole new ball game. And so when the kids would come to my office, it was funny when they'd first come in, I had my desk set up like this and I had chairs across the desk. It probably wasn't a real cozy, comfy arrangement, but it was also not a very big office. It was sort of what we had.
It's what you had, exactly.
It was what we had, yeah. But I noticed there were two chairs and I would look to see if the student stepped back and let the parent in first. The parent would go to the corner and the student would sit across from me, directly across from me. If the parent stepped back and let the student go in first, the student would sit in the corner and the parent would be directly across from me. And it took me about 5 minutes to figure out, yeah, we have to fix this arrangement because that was my first indication of who was doing the talking, because your instincts are to talk to the person directly across from you. And so it was not a big deal. It was just understanding and realizing that even that physical act of shifting seats was a nonverbal signal that there's going to be a change in the transition. And I think what happens is the more you are prepared for that transitional change, the more you, before you get to that spot, you as a parent worked with your kid to establish these changes that were going on, that were going to happen.
Right.
The easier that transition was. There were so many times that I would ask a question and I would ask the question this way to the student and the parent would answer this way. And I, you know, thank you, but let's, you know, I want to do this question with the student as well. What do you think? Do you agree with your mom? You know, and it's an uncomfortable situation, but it's also, it's a learning curve for everybody.
Right.
Because when I would say to them, well, you realize that things are going to change now and I can't talk, I'd say to the mom, I can't really talk to you anymore. I have to talk to your daughter or your son. And it was so funny because sometimes the kids would go, yes. And other times they would, and other times they would go, oh no. Because they've grown accustomed to
right
the advocacy on their behalf.
Right. Yep.
So,
Yeah, as you were talking, I'm just thinking hot seat. Put that kid on the hot seat as much as you can.
Really. And that's what it, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Whenever we go into situations, you know, I remember telling my kids, they look to me for an answer and I'm like, what do you got?
Exactly.
I'm not speaking.
You can answer that. Yeah, that's your answer.
So, yeah. But yeah, I just. Yeah.
It's okay. Your kids were lucky that you did that, because that you've automatically transferred that accountability onto their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the main thing.
Yeah.
And it can be a difficult job. I mean, there are ways to prepare for it, but mm-hmm. it can be a very difficult job. Mm-hmm. But I know that was one of the very first things that I noticed. And it wasn't like I was even trying to exclude the parents,
mm-hmm.
but more include the child.
Right. But you again, you talked about that legal change that happens, and the necessity of that student to be able to self-advocate
mm-hmm.
because of that change in how things are just run at that level when they transition out of high school.
Yeah, the law has changed completely because they're no longer under IDEA and the K-12 system.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever rules, whether you're homeschooling or public schooling, whatever rules you were under are gone. And now you're under the ADA. Mm-hmm. And that's an entirely different ballgame.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, because there's, excuse me, there's so much of the ADA is open to interpretation.
Oh, I never realized that.
Yeah. And so when you go to one college, what you learn at one college is not necessarily going to be the same thing at another college.
Okay.
Now, all colleges have to accommodate. That's the law. Mm-hmm. Okay. And all colleges address certain disabilities. There's a legal definition for a disability and you know, they follow that.
Right.
But the accommodations that they do, the documentations that they require, every college has the ability to kind of set up their own guidelines.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. So yeah, like when
interesting.
At there was where I'm at in the area that I'm at, the local community college, it's a junior college now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you see this a lot of times. Junior colleges and state colleges partner up.
Right.
So you'll be at a junior college or a community college, but you don't ever have to physically leave the building, but you transition into the state college's rules and regulations.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And even if you had an accommodation in the junior college, you may not get that same accommodation when you transfer.
Okay.
So a person who is going and looking at colleges,
mm-hmm.
you go to a college, do your home visit, or your visits, and check out a couple different places and talk to the disability people there
mm-hmm.
about those differences and, you know, the kind of documentation they want
mm-hmm.
and the kind of accommodations based on the documentation. That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody wants the same documentation. Not everybody will give the same accommodations. So that's why you really have to help your child realize
mm-hmm.
that these changes are happening.
Yeah.
And I think way ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the best ways you can advocate and teach yourself, your child to self-advocate, is to have them become familiar with the rule changes that they're going to experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's number one, because when they get into a new situation and they have a problem and they have to solve their problem,
mm-hmm.
what do they do? How are they going to solve the problem?
Right.
You just can't scream at the professor and assume everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just get into a fight with another kid in your class and assume they're not going to call the police.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Uh-huh.
I've had that happen. So it's mm-hmm. so, funny story for another day, but it's not high school anymore. So the rules are changing. The rules are different.
Yeah.
And so the best thing you could do as you're preparing is be there with your child to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the self-advocacy switches over to them, just like in the definition, learn how to get information, find out who's going to support you.
Mm-hmm.
Know your rights and responsibilities. Figure out how to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out how to deal with a professor who is doing something you don't like.
Right. Exactly.
So,
yeah, I had shared with Mickey ahead of time the broadcast that my son had to do that. He chose not to be diagnosed, and he got some grades that were not agreeable, and he knew that they weren't fair, and ended up having to advocate for himself up to the dean of the college,
yeah,
and did get those changed. But it is a different process.
It is a very different process. Yeah. And I didn't say this earlier, but actually what your son was going through and what you've experienced is not atypical. That's very typical.
Mm.
Kids, I kind of look at college as the great equalizer. Mm. When you're going into college, nobody knows if you have a disability or not.
Right.
They just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it's something physical that they can see.
Yeah.
If it's something other, whether it's autism or an emotional disability or right, learning disability or whatever it happens mm-hmm. to be, they don't know. Even the, mm-hmm. the professors don't know. The professors do not see your documentation. They do not know your diagnosis unless you choose to tell them. Okay. There's a lot of, see, mm-hmm. again, rules mm-hmm. and know the policies and know mm-hmm. the procedures. How would you respond if you did not want to share your disability with a professor? And the professor says, well, tell me, what is your disability?
Mm.
How do you answer that question?
Right.
So it's the kind of thing where you have to prepare ahead of time how you want to address that. If you want to mm-hmm. share, that's good. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I never advise people to share or to not share. I really don't. I've mm-hmm. seen success with both directions.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it backfire and I've seen it work. So it's one of those things where when you're teaching your child to advocate for himself or herself, mm-hmm. that might be a conversation you have.
Right.
Which takes me to how much does your child know about their disability?
That is a very good thing to talk yeah. about. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had a parent call and say, I'll send you the documentation, but you can't share it with them.
Oh.
Well, that's just not going to happen. That's a big no.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen. You may send it to me if you want. If you want to redact something on it, that's your business.
Mm-hmm.
If it's got what I need, okay. But I need to see what you're sending me, and I need to be able to discuss it with your child.
Yeah. So many adults, you know, on the other side, so many of our parents have learning disabilities, you know, they yes. realize that their kids are diagnosed and then they go, oh my goodness, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. That's
very common.
Very normal. Yeah.
my kids were diagnosed on the spectrum and then my parents turned around and said, Peggy, that's you. I was like, oh yeah. But not once did anyone say, oh, I wish I would have never found that out. They're like, what a relief. Now
yeah,
I've got myself exactly. figured out.
Exactly.
So you're
exactly.
not really doing your child an advantage by holding those things.
No, you're really not. And they know something's wrong.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, usually 11, 12, 13, they start to really pick up on the significant differences.
Right. And then so they're blaming themselves. Though,
exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, yeah, it can get very complicated. Quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've had that with the college. I had I had one girl, then this was I was an adjunct professor for 11 years when I was mm-hmm. doing the disability services. Mm-hmm. So I would teach developmental reading and writing for the kids that hadn't scored well enough on their placement test to go into college level work.
Uh-huh.
And so I taught usually a couple classes every semester, and I always asked them what their schedule was,
mm.
just to sort of know what else is going on besides right. my class.
Mm-hmm.
And I was collecting them, and the one girl looks at me and she goes, "Oh, I don't know what it is. My mom made out my schedule and I have no idea."
What?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, really? Okay. Mm. So that's kind of scary at that age.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's reality. If you don't get, I mean, I don't want to sound scary, but that is reality. If you don't get your kid ready, they need to be prepared mm-hmm. to transition over to becoming their own advocate.
Right. Yeah.
It's just natural.
What they can handle and.
Exactly. And when you need to step in and when you,
mm-hmm.
and when you don't step in, because college is a funny thing with, you really have to teach the child how to address the problems. Mm-hmm. And because they're not going to call you to tell you there's a problem.
Actually, my kid's dad. I think that's one of the things I focused on is I taught them more to self-advocate. I made sure our relationship got closer.
Yes.
So that I was the person they chose. That when they
had that is a hard good.
Question.
Exactly. And that's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I had one student who had a big problem. The school is not going to call the parents. The school is not going to let you know.
No.
They mm-hmm. just can't. Yeah. That's FERPA law.
Mm-hmm.
That's illegal. It's like HIPAA law. It's HIPAA law for education, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to call and say, you know, your son or daughter had this XYZ problem. And, you know, mm-hmm. they're not even going to call and say we had to call the police. They're not nope. going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so usually they offer the kid the opportunity to bring someone over with them if they want to, you know, get their parent and let them know.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to them. But that's not their... that's not an automatic.
Right.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. people have to realize that.
Yeah.
That's why what you're talking about is so critical, that you be with your kid to help them
mm-hmm.
get it started.
Right. And let them, that relationship be a trusting relationship. Where
exactly.
And one where you're accepting, because there's going to be a lot of things that they're going to throw at you that you aren't going to like.
You're right there.
I have two adult boys.
With the age. You did what?
No. Exactly.
But yeah.
And just be willing to say, I love you anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get through this.
We do. We do. And that's,
Yeah.
And so it's being there. Like you said, when your son chose not to take his accommodations and not to self-identify. That's the other thing. People think there's stuff automatically comes over. There, it does
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody knows until the kid goes to disability services, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and self-identifies. That's what gets it started. So, it's not unusual for kids to do that. I always suggested if you're going to do that and not use your accommodations,
mm-hmm.
I think it's just my opinion. You're already here. You've already self-identified. I know you're here. You're in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of my students now. So let's. But if you don't want to have the accommodations, see, when you get the accommodations, until you get them to the professor, mm-hmm. you don't have them. See, the disability services will prepare them,
mm-hmm.
and they'll give them to the kid, or they'll some email them directly to the professor.
Okay.
We didn't. We gave it to the kid. If the kid took it to the professor, okay. If they didn't, mm-hmm. okay. But it becomes a problem if there's a problem.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So until that professor has that document mm-hmm. that says this student has registered for a disability and gets XYZ accommodations,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to happen. So what you experienced is not unusual. Now, I used to tell the kids, well, at least let's do the accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
You keep them in your back pocket. Yeah. And if you run into a situation where this was the wrong decision, or it's getting harder, or you're surprised by what the mm-hmm. test is going to be like, or whatever it happens to be,
right.
you have them all prepared to share.
Yes. Yeah.
And at least at that way, that way they can at least, they don't have to spend, because getting those accommodations, depending on this operation of your college, might not be quick.
Yeah.
It could be a couple of weeks before you get all the paperwork in place and register and bring everything in and the person evaluates it. And so this way, if you've got it all done, at least you have it available to you.
Right.
And you can even let the professor know, I have these accommodations, but for right now, I'm going to try without them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have to do that knowing that you can't, you don't get redos.
Right.
There's no do-overs. There's no do-overs in college. So if you try it and it doesn't work, and you say, well, okay, I'm going to use my accommodations, you can't go back and do it again with your accommodations. Mm-hmm. You live with the results and look forward to the next opportunity to improve.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, those are some great points. I never even thought about that ability to be able to apply and just hold on to them and getting through that process, because like you said, it is quite a process. And for a lot of homeschoolers, they don't even quite know what they need to prepare. We talk to parents about writing their own homeschool IEPs, especially in high school, so they can document and create history and just how important that is. And so if you're in those high school years and you are homeschooling, just know that on our website at spedhomeschool.com, we have a free download that's an IEP template and step-by-step instructions on how to
Excellent.
So that'll help you with that process and all of keeping all that information in a way so like people in the position like Mickey used to have understand it instead of just a homeschool parent throwing stuff at them with years of history and portfolios and other things, but it's in an actual document that's very similar to one a public school would.
What are the other tips? If you don't mind, I'll just pass it along real quick. It's not necessarily self-advocacy, but when you're getting your evaluations done for a learning disability, with the little ones and the middle schoolers, they use child norms. So when you take a test, they compare your scores to other children. When you're in the teenage years, you want them to use adult norms. Because when colleges look at the documentation that you bring, if you had a psych eval done, psychological evaluation done, and you had it done when they were in the ninth grade, say, or 10th grade, did that person doing the evaluation use child norms or adult norms? Because the college isn't interested in child norms. They're interested in adult norms. So that's just a little aside.
Yeah. I think that's why I interviewed some people from their lawyers out in California, and they were saying, wait till you get as close to the end of the high school years to get your child evaluated, because that's where those tests are going to make the most difference.
That's right. And it goes down to those norms.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the first things I looked at when I looked at a documentation, is to see what tests they did and what norms they used. So just a little secret of the trade, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's really good information to know. And again, those tests help your student advocate for themselves.
When they do.
They have that information, and it's black and white on paper.
And those usually come with suggestions and explanations, and it gives your child a chance to learn. It goes back to learning and understanding.
Right.
You know, if you need, when you take your test, for example, if you need a private room, or if you need a reader, or if you need some sort of an alternative format, which is a little trickier to do, but if you need those kinds of things, talking to the person who gave you the test, and understanding what their recommendations are for the ways you where your strengths are and where your struggles are, and what you might be able to do to support those struggles.
Yes.
So it just helps you. It all goes and it all goes back to knowledge. How much knowledge you have, how much information you have. It really does.
Yeah. And we found, too, that especially for my kids, those high school years, I wanted to make sure we tried as many accommodations out as possible to see what worked. Because I wanted them to know by the time they graduated, what works for you and what doesn't.
Exactly.
So you can tell people with confidence, this works for me.
This works for me. And this, yes, exactly. So the more of that you can do, the better. And that makes perfect sense to me. Especially when you're in the homeschooling position, because so many of what the things that you do and that you're working on, you are already teaching them skills to adjust. Right? I mean,
so it's constant.
My sister-in-law who homeschools said, maybe by the time they get to that point where they're transitioning into college or into a job or into a vocational school or wherever they're switching to, that they are, they don't need the accommodation because they already know how to accommodate themselves. So, I mean, I think you're doing a valuable service with supporting your kids already in that situation.
If they can use those. And I think I had somebody ask about, you know, speech to text at one point, and they're like, and where do I get that, you know, kind of software? I'm like, Google. You know, everybody uses it. So
Google, the Google speech to text is wonderful. It really is.
I use it every day.
Absolutely.
A lot of time, and I don't need the accommodation. But for those that do, if you can get your child to master that, that's great.
Yeah, so, there's one of the people I just interviewed. I didn't know if you caught it or not, but on my podcast, I knew him when he was a freshman in college, and he's now a PhD. And he has cerebral palsy.
Oh, I did listen to that one.
Yeah, and he said Dragon, naturally speaking, is his best friend. He uses it constantly. So that's because of the cerebral palsy affected his speech. And also it affected his hand movements. So he uses the technology all the time.
But it takes a learning curve to be able to use
it. Absolutely, it does. Absolutely, it does.
Once you get it down, then it just becomes second nature.
And that goes back to self-advocacy. What do I need? How do I get it? Disability services can give you some things. LiveScribe pens or those CC pens. A lot of offices have those, and they can sign off the material, loan it to you. Basically, there's no charge. They don't charge you for any of their accommodations, but they will give you if they have it, they'll loan you equipment. If you need recorders or if you need those LiveScribe pens or Dragon or Jaws or whatever you happen to need, if they have it, they will loan it. If they don't have it, they can't, or they if they can get it, they will. It just depends on the extent of the purchase. That's, again, that every college does it differently. Those are conversations you have.
So with those are the questions you ask. And
what you need.
Teach your child how to ask.
Exactly.
Yes.
I used FM systems for deaf students. And an FM system is a microphone on the teacher and a receiver for the student that was hearing impaired. Not completely deaf, but hearing impaired. And I can remember one, we had the FM system about the size of a pack of cards, deck of cards, or pack of cigarettes, that sort of size. Sits in your pocket, and microphone on your shirt, and a receiver in your ear, and there's nothing to it. They're really, it's really a good system. And the biggest thing is making sure that whoever has the microphone, which is in generally the professor, doesn't walk away with it.
Collect it every time.
it could be embarrassing. You just don't.
Exactly. It's like when in a conversation, they mic me up.
it was so funny. Yeah, exactly. It was funny because I had a adult woman who just didn't, she just was, didn't want to do it. She was just so hesitant. Mm-hmm. And I said, why don't you take it home, test it out at home? And she came back. She was so excited. She could hear her husband calling her from the other room.
Uh-huh.
And she could never hear this before.
Wow.
And she just, mm-hmm. after that, she used it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point that you make, is making that impression on our kids that these are life-changing things that they're advocating for.
Mm-hmm.
Not just,
exactly.
This is a device, or this is, you know, just something good to ask for. But
yeah.
This really does help you
yes.
be able to integrate better into the classroom, society, and just life in general. Yeah.
The colleges have their equipment. They usually, at least, again, I can speak for us.
Mm-hmm.
You check with your college. But we signed it out for a semester, and then they returned it. And then if they needed it again, you know, they signed it out again. There was no charge unless they damaged it or lost it, mm-hmm. like anything. Mm-hmm. But I had something called a flipper, which I've never seen other than this one time. But for a kid who had low vision, all right. Mm-hmm. But what it did is, and he asked me about it. He said, I use this at work. Is it something I could get here? And I said, well, tell me what it is. We'll look into it. Mm-hmm. And it was a camera set up that aimed at the board.
Okay.
And then it took the information on the board and transferred it to his desk laptop.
Oh. Okay.
So you take what's on the board that you can't see off in the distance,
mm-hmm.
and it's all superimposed on the laptop.
Oh, kind of like almost a microscope for long distance.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was called a flipper. I don't even know if they make them anymore, but it was a pretty amazing piece of equipment, and he used it a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but again, that's self-advocacy. He came to me. He mm-hmm. said, I use this at work. Could we get it here? Because I would have not ever mm-hmm. known.
Yeah. But that's great that he was able to do that.
And mm-hmm. So it all circles back to knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. And what you know.
Yeah.
So that you can know what to ask for.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the more that we can do while we're educating our kids, and as they're getting older, to help them to know about that and what to mm-hmm. ask for, and,
exactly.
and what works for them becomes yeah. more important as we transition out of our role as advocate and allow them to do that more. But, you know, as we're talking about that, one of the questions I did want to make sure we touched on, Mickey, is, you know, as parents move out of that advocacy role and we move our children into that hot seat, as I called it.
Yeah, exactly.
How do our roles can be still involved, mm-hmm. yet not be the one who's speaking? Is there things that parents can still do to help out
yes,
with that?
Absolutely. There are several things. One of the things that I've always, always suggested to the students and to the parents
mm-hmm.
was to read the syllabus together.
Oh, that's important.
John. Every class, every faculty, I've never seen a faculty who didn't, no matter where they're at, is going to give their students a syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
And the syllabus is a contract. Think of it as a contract.
Mm-hmm.
This is the contract between the faculty and the student.
Mm-hmm.
When the faculty says, here's your syllabus, here's your contract, mm-hmm. These are my rules, this is what I expect.
Right.
This is how I grade, this is my attendance,
mm-hmm.
this is whatever they're putting on it.
Right.
That is what the student needs to follow.
Mm.
So I think one of the first things that a parent and their kid can do is take some time at home and sit down and read that syllabus together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when you send your kid off with the syllabus, they at least know what's on it, and they know if they need to adjust it for an accommodation or ask for anything special, then you have a basis to start from. You have knowledge in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You as a parent have knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in that syllabus. Because if you have to go to the dean, whatever it is, so this is the thing I always ran into. The very first question the dean would ask is, what does it say in the syllabus?
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Mm-hmm. And if you can't answer that, how can you defend what you need?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that and let the disability services people know when it's not the last day of class.
Yes.
Tip there. I can't do a lot for you. This is the last day of class.
Oh, but, yeah.
But that's where that syllabus and sitting down with you and your kid makes just, I think that's like one of the biggest things you can do, because then you as a parent know what the kid is expected to do.
Mm-hmm. And I'm even thinking backwards on this as homeschoolers, something we highly recommend is parents set up rubrics that their child knows what's required to get a certain grade. And that's how you grade it. And also to show your children your lesson plans. This is what we're doing. When you do that, you're going to prepare them for what Mickey's talking about is the syllabus. That's basically the same thing.
It is.
If they've done it enough years in their homeschooling and say, oh, yeah, this is just what mom does with us.
Yeah, exactly.
I know exactly now what's expected of me and what this class is going to be about, because they're used to that format and being presented that format.
And even if you two are looking at the syllabus, if there's something on it that doesn't make sense to you as a parent, then it would. You would be able to say to your kid, check on this. Go ask when you get a chance, ask your professor to explain this a little bit more. See exactly what they're talking about here.
That's a
but
good point.
So often the kids, they don't pick up on that themselves. They're more reactive than proactive.
Right.
And so you by doing that ahead of time. And I used to offer it. I would offer it to all my new students. If you come, if you want to come see me, and I doubt if most of them can get that in the college, but I used to say, if you want to come see me, make an appointment and we'll look at your syllabus if you want
That's
to.
Great. Yeah.
And I had a couple, two, three every semester who would come by with their syllabus just to go over it to make sure that they were understanding what was coming.
Right.
Because with a learning disability or with a processing disorder.
Yes.
It's
that becomes very difficult to interpret.
It does. And so having another set of eyes. You know, I offered another set of eyes, but in reality, the best set of eyes would be you as a parent. So I think that's probably that. And the code of conduct. I'll put those in the same package. Every college has a code of conduct, and it's very specific. And I have had students who were called up to the dean because of conduct issues. And they will get removed. the colleges will not hesitate to do that if they need to. They're generally generous about, you know, talking through it, you know, and sometimes the offense gets to the dean. Sometimes it doesn't get any farther than disability services. And sometimes it goes beyond, but it's you know the code of conduct, especially if you know that your child is prone to outbursts or behavior problems or things like that. Address those up front and think about how that child could accommodate themselves in the college room. If they feel like they're percolating, maybe make an accommodation where they can sit by the door and step out for a brief moment just to regroup. It's a simple accommodation, but it's something that if you did it in the class, just cause you could have a problem. But if you did it as an accommodation, it would probably be fine.
Yeah, that's a good point to make.
So,
it's handled completely different at that level, and you don't want that to ruin your child's college career because they just didn't know what to ask for or what they needed in that environment,
and how to bring themselves to calm themselves and bring them back
down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of things like that. That, but I think code of conduct and syllabus with your kids. And then third one, the disability services policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So all three of those together, if you know what the syllabus, what the faculty expects, and if you know what the college expects, so faculty syllabus, college would be the code of conduct, and disability services would be however they run their operation. It differs.
Okay.
Some disability services is one person who wears 10 hats. And others is a huge department with multiple people.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's all different and just have to know how to navigate wherever you are. And
right. Exactly.
So, yeah. But walking through those steps is so helpful because if your student already knows ahead of time, then it isn't just this labyrinth that when I'm in a panic situation, I have to figure out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where that shifting that advocacy into self-advocacy from you at home, and you're in an ideal situation with the homeschooling because you know, and you can help your child know when they need to pull back and when they need to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that they're comfortable because we all know that if we feel comfortable in our knowledge, we're less scared of messing up.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So.
And that confidence, we can just keep building that and it will help our students become better self-advocates over time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got just a few minutes left and I would love for you to share some resources with us, especially how our viewers can connect with you and your resources as well.
Sure.
So I don't know which ones you want me to pull up, but I'll click the links when you talk.
Well, you go ahead and click a link and I'll.
Okay.
My website, NikkiTeaches.com.
Yeah, let's go to your website first here.
All right, NikkiTeaches.com. Yeah, I just finished redoing it. It's all shiny and new. So if anybody runs into any, did you like it? Oh, good.
Yeah, I did. Like, oh.
I'd like to say it's been a labor of love, but mostly it's been a labor.
Labor, yes. I feel that about our website too.
Yeah. I think it looks better now, but I'll apologize up front if any of the links don't work correctly. Mm-hmm. I think I called them all, but it's MickeyTeaches.com. And if anybody wants to send me an email, I'm at MickeyTeaches@gmail.com.
Okay.
I don't know if you had that up there, but it's just @gmail.
Didn't have that.
It's the same thing, MickeyTeaches. Yeah.
And if you're listening to the podcast and you don't see the link, Mickey is spelled MickiE, teaches.com.
I think when I was about 12, I decided the boys spelled it with an EY.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. So, and also, I'm just going to let our viewers know that I'm going to take all these links that Mickey shared at the beginning, in the middle, and here at the end. I'm going to put them all in the YouTube description. So if you're listening on the podcast or you're watching on Facebook, just know you can go to the Sped Homeschool YouTube channel. This video will have all those links. So you can just click on them too.
There's one for the course.
Yes.
I wanted to be sure to let your audience know.
That's awesome.
Would you like it? Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
I don't know why it coded out to those numbers. I that's one of those links I was trying to fix and it wasn't happening. So we'll just stick with that.
Yep.
Mickey Teaches 453-2. I have no idea. That's what. But if you go to that course, I set it up for free. It's a small price. It's $27 is what I normally put. But right now, because I want it accessible to anybody who needs it.
Mm.
But right now, I have it set for free, zero cost. All you got to do is go in and put your name in, and it'll be free until Thursday night, midnight.
Okay.
So awesome. If anybody's interested, they're more than welcome to go.
Very cool. Yeah.
And let's see what else.
That's some great information. The Think College.
Think College is the last position I had was a director of a TPSED grant. And a TPSED grant is a transition grant for young adults transitioning to college who have intellectual disabilities.
Mm.
And they're inclusive programs on college campuses.
Hmm.
They usually work towards a certificate. You could work towards a degree, depending on the level of ability. but they're inclusive classes. The idea is to, for a student with an intellectual disability who would not normally go into a bachelor's program or an associate's mm-hmm. program, but yet still have the experience of being in college, being around mm-hmm. their peers, mm-hmm. Learning everything that you need to know about social interactions and mm-hmm. joining organizations and clubs. And it's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so I was working, I was the director of the TIPSED grant in Florida. So my job was to go around the state and help set up some of these programs in Florida. Mm. And I did that till our grant cycle went to 2015, which was when I retired. They picked up another one after that in Florida. Mm. But at any rate, if you go to the Think College website, thinkcollege.net, mm-hmm. if you go to that website, that will have all of the programs throughout the United States. Excuse me.
Yeah.
All throughout the United States. So
so it's a great resource for parents.
It's a great resource for anybody who's interested in yeah. the college opportunity for children with intellectual disabilities in particular.
Great. Yeah. And then there you shared the ONET.
I like ONET. That's just my favorite.
Mm-hmm. I recommend it too.
Yeah, good. Because if you're looking for career lines and career plans for careers, what I like about ONET above all things, it does everything any other job source would do. But what I like about ONET is it's on levels. So you can be looking at jobs that fit somebody who has a very basic level mm-hmm. to somebody who's got a very advanced level
right.
in the same job category.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, really a good resource if you get a chance to go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last one is the STAR, the transition, Project 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Project 10 is the transition resource throughout the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. When I did the TIPSED grant, I was part of the Project 10 group. And part of the thing that I had to do for the TIPSED grant was to develop a person-centered planning
yes.
process. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things where what you're doing, and it goes back to preparing your child for that transition mm. and teaching them the advocacy that they need.
Right.
But it's all about helping them plan who they are, mm. where they see themselves in 5 years, where right. they're at now, mm-hmm. what they need to accomplish to get there. And so we developed the STAR program. It's students transitioning to adult roles. Mm. And we based it on the 5 points of the STAR, and there's the 5 points in the transition. And we built it like an event mm-hmm. where family and friends get together and they,
neat.
You know, work on helping their child come up with a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the kind of thing that a parent can do. This has to be done by either a consortium, if you have a homeschool consortium, or homeschool groups
right.
to yep. meet. Mm-hmm. We'll have one person in the group who would be in charge of the person-centered planning arrangement.
Okay.
Because you don't want the parents can't do this because they're involved in the process with their kid.
Mm. Okay.
So you need a person who's going to facilitate and one who's going to record.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And there's a big STAR model. I gave you a picture. I think I sent it. Of one of the STAR, STAR board, the STAR charts, we called them, okay. that the kid, you may not have it pulled up.
I don't have it pulled up right
That's
now.
Okay. But there's a STAR chart yeah. that's, has an example of one of the kids when you do your STAR chart, once you finish this project, it's on a big, like 4x4 piece of paper. You can project it onto a wall. You can, cool. you can go to Kinko or FedEx or one of those places right. that enlarges mm-hmm. things, and they'll put it on a great big sheet of paper. We had ours built on a whiteboard, believe it or not, because we used it all the time. Mm. So whenever we had another kid who was doing their STAR project, we would just get the whiteboard because then they could fill it in and take a picture and then
picture of it. Yeah.
And then it was very inexpensive to do. We did it mm-hmm. at, I think Kinko's or FedEx, one of those places did it for us. But that's an ideal project for kids that are in about the 11th grade, 12th grade, and they just don't know what direction they're going in and what they need yet to finish. So that's the star chart.
Super. Well, thank you for sharing all those resources, and thanks for everything that you've shared tonight. It's been so good and enlightening just to learn so many things that I didn't know about. And so I'm sure our audience is.
And the one other thing is, anything that I talked about today, if it doesn't apply to college, that's cool. If it applies to going for a job or it applies to a vocational school, it's all the same.
Yes.
System. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just applying it to
figure out.
You just have to figure out with your transitioning and advocating
right
at that different environment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's great. Well, I appreciate all your time.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm glad the thunderstorms didn't come back, so you were online the whole time.
I was really worried. I texted Peggy about 6 o'clock going, oh, we're having storms. And it was, you know, it got dark and lightning and thunder.
Which
in Florida, they go away in 5 minutes sometimes. But
right, exactly.
It was looking a little scary there for a while, but we're good. We didn't lose power. That was my biggest thing.
Yes. So that's awesome. And I hope that that you all connect with Mickey's resources. She is a wealth of information, as you've heard. she has a lot to share. So, and take advantage of that free course that she's offering for a couple of days, because I've already started watching it, and it has a lot of really good content in it. So
Thank you. It's all videos. I did videos, so you can do the whole thing in about 3 hours. I think I timed it out 3.5 hours if you want to go from start to finish. And it's something your kid can watch too. Should watch actually. Because it helps them. It goes back to that knowledge that you need when you're walking through those doors.
Right. Exactly. So. Yeah. Well, I've got a couple updates to share with our audience as we're wrapping up here. I just want to let you know that this episode's being possible by viewers like you. Sped Homeschool is a 501c3 nonprofit. So if you want to find out how to become a donor partner with us, you can visit us at spedhomeschool.com/donate. And if you do check out our website, you'll see that we have a whole new front page. Talking about website redesign. My mentor got on my case and said, people don't know you're a nonprofit when they go to your website. You have to have the donate button right there, middle and center. So that is the new page. And we want you to know that we are here to empower you and to transform your family from being frustrated to empowered to do homeschooling and to help your child achieve the goals that they're able to achieve as you homeschool them. So and if you're homeschooling high school and you're feeling like, hey, I still have lots of questions, that's great, because we have a webinar coming up this Saturday live with one of our team members. She is an ex-special ed teacher, and it's a small group like counseling session, and you can bring all your questions. She'll help you talk about transcripts and diplomas and courses and all of that for an hour. So sign up for that. That's on our parent training courses. And also we have a whole masterclass we have put together. It took 2 years. And it's a masterclass on how to homeschool high school for your struggling learner. And that's also on parent training courses. So lots of downloads there. The videos are extremely short, most of them, but the resources that you get with that is because we were going to make it into a book. And we just said, nope, we're going to put it into a course. It's a little easier. But also if you're looking for curriculum, if you're looking for therapists, if you're looking for people who can help you pick curriculum, like consultants, or figure out how do I even teach my child? We have all of that information on our website. So if you go to get homeschool help on our front page, there'll be a list of different things that you can pick from, like our podcasts, and our blog was actually just rated as the number one special needs homeschooling blog by FeedSpot a couple weeks ago. So we have great content on there, and our partners write amazing stuff. And this month, we're actually, instead of just one blog a week, we're releasing two. just to get more information out to you about starting homeschooling and resources on our website that will really be helpful. So
it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Excited to be doing that because I've been hearing from a lot of you saying, wow, if it wasn't for sped homeschool, we wouldn't be doing this. That just warms my heart because that's why we're here.
So, that's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, Mickey. It was a joy to get to know you. And
well, thank you. I enjoyed this so much.
Yeah. And thank you all for joining us. Next week, I will not be here, but this Friday, we have a very special broadcast that we're doing instead because I'm going to be out of town next week. So on Friday, Cindy LaJoy from Blue Collar Homeschool is going to be joining us. And we're going to be talking about launching developmentally delayed teens. And she has done that with three of her adopted children. And she's going to kind of share her story. And we're going to get into a lot of difficulties, the hard stuff that parents deal with as we're trying to launch kids and launch them well. So I hope you can join us for that special session. It'll be at 4:00 Friday Central Time. So we'll hope to see you there. But thanks again, everybody, for joining us. And
Peggy, thank you. This has been wonderful. What you do is just fabulous. It's such a blessing. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, Mickey. And it's been a joy having you, and I've got to have you back.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.
See you later.
Our world can feel chaotic and uncertain, but we don't have to live enslaved to fear. Christ has promised me and you his peace, and throughout Scripture has provided powerful tools and practical steps to help us experience greater freedom. I'm Jennifer Slattery, lead host of the Faith Over Fear podcast, inviting you to join me and my team as together we learn how to starve our fears and feed our faith. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com or wherever you access podcast content.